our potential. It's exponential. Hey, what's up, guys? I'm here with Alex Salazar from Tropical Acres Farm. Thank you, brother, for coming.
Of course. No problem. Happy to be here. Excited.
Me too. Yeah, so how are the mangoes looking on your farm this year?
Looking pretty good. Last year was kind of an epic mango crop in Florida, one of the best that we had had in recent decades. And we were kind of wondering how it was going to go for us this year, because sometimes when you have a big year, it's followed up by a lackluster year. Because the trees are kind of exhausted and, you know, not ready to churn out a bunch of fruit again. But as it turned out, we had a pretty good winter, and the trees flowered reasonably well, not as intensely as last year. But normally, if we get a bloom, we're going to get fruit, at least in our location. So we have a very, I would say, positive outlook on the season for us right now. The rest of the state, not so great. But so we feel blessed that we've got the crop that we do have.
Yeah, so we do have mangoes coming.
Yep, absolutely.
What is it right now? March, like 30th almost.
Yeah, almost. Yeah, we're March 20-something, 27th, whatever. So.
You guys are in West Palm Beach.
We're in the city of West Palm Beach. So.
Which is really cool.
Yeah, a lot of times you see a West Palm Beach address, it could be many miles out west of West Palm Beach and unincorporated. Palm Beach County.
Yes.
So people, when we tell them where we're located, a lot of times they still will assume that we're out west, which is where most of the ag in Palm Beach County is located and found. But we're actually in the city limits of West Palm Beach. We are literally about 5 minutes south of downtown West Palm Beach, east of I-95.
East of I-95.
Yeah. So we're.
So how did you come about this piece of land?
Well, it was interesting. When I had determined that I wanted to do this for a living, I was still in college. And at that time I was doing a lot of research on mangoes and tropical fruit in general, but mostly mangoes.
Interesting. Where were you?
What's that?
Where were you going to school?
At that time I was at the University of South Florida in Tampa.
Got it.
And I was living over there. But I knew at that point in time that this was what I wanted to do for a living, or I was pretty sure of it.
Be a mango farmer.
Kind of. Or be involved in tropical fruit horticulture in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And so I was at this time doing all this research on mangoes. And, you know, back then there wasn't a lot of consolidated information about mangoes on the internet. It was information to be found, but you really had to search for it. You had to go looking in old archives of the Florida State Horticultural Society, old books, things of that sort. Mm. And I would kind of go through those, and I knew a little bit about mango history already before I really delved into the hobby, if you will, while I was in college. And in some of these old publications back in the day, they didn't have any reservations about publishing people's addresses. In the old Florida Mango Forum archives, you could find in these, PDF files, directories of membership, and they would say their phone numbers and addresses. And, so I would look up some of these addresses out of curiosity because I recognized their names. So like some of these names of people who had mangoes named after them. And I thought, well, maybe some of these original trees are still around. Mm. And I started making kind of this map of some of these properties, like a Google map, where I saved some of these addresses. And I would look from aerial shots and stuff and Street View to see if there was still any mango trees there.
Or on at Google least trees Maps?
In, yeah. Mm-hmm, really? Back in 2009 or 10 or whatever.
Looking for mango collections in 2009?
Yeah, back then I was looking. And so I kind of made these maps, and a lot of the places were long gone, but some of them were still there, or at least appeared to be. And one of the properties that came up was the Sturrocks. The Sturrock family had a lot of involvement in mangoes back in the 30s, 40s, 50s. And they really made a name for themselves. And their property was, their addresses were in one of these old archives. So I looked it up, and there were still visible segments of orchard there. So I knew there was at least something there. And it must have been in, I don't remember what year this was, might have been 2010, that I back then you could find people's phone numbers a little easier on Google, and I found a phone number associated with that address. And I was interested in budwood because I wanted to graft mangoes, learn how to graft them. And back then it was harder for me to find a lot of the varieties I was interested in.
You wanted budwood? You wanted scion?
So I called this phone number that I found on Google, and I was expecting it to be dead phone or whatever, right. No line, whatever, or nobody would answer. Well, sure enough, somebody answered. And it was a woman in her 90s, and it was her name is Jean Sturrock. Wasn't Jean Sturrock. She was Tom Sturrock's husband. I mean, wife. What am I saying?
Tom
Sturrock's wife. And so his widow, really, because he was deceased. And so, but she was still alive. She was 90 something years old, and she was still living in this house by herself, remarkably.
Interesting.
And she said, she was very hard of hearing, but she could hear enough of what I was saying. And she said, yeah, we sold part of the property a long time ago, but a lot of the trees are still here. We have this, 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 and this. She was still very sharp, very aged, but very sharp. And like, I brought up the Rare Fruit Council, and she's like, oh, do they still meet there in, you know, the mounts, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, she told me that she wasn't really doing anything with the trees anymore. And, you know, the property had kind of come into disrepair a bit, but one of her sons was becoming interested in mangoes again. He was a veterinarian up in Jacksonville. And she said, I'll put you in contact with him because I'm sure he'll be interested in talking to you. So she gave him my phone number, and we got into communication and became friends. And I started my company in 2011.
Amazing. What's your company?
Tropical Acres Farms.
So
I bought 5 acres of land. At that point in time, I decided, maybe foolishly, that this was what I wanted to do for a living, and to hell with anything else, to hell with what I was studying. I didn't care.
We choose our path, right?
Yeah. And so I graduated from college a little early.
Okay.
In fact, I had graduated in 2010.
And how old were you when you started Tropical Acres?
22. But I was 21 when I graduated college. And I just wanted to be done with college. I didn't care about it anymore.
Yes.
I was fortunate that I had some prior college credit prior to actually going to college from when I was in high school. And it allowed me to graduate a little early. So.
Mm-hmm.
What were we going to say?
So you graduated over in Tampa, right?
Yes. I started at the University of Miami, and I couldn't afford to stay there. It was an expensive school. I loved the school, but that was where I started college. And then I transferred to USF because they had my major, and because I could afford it. You know, like, I had scholarships from the state of Florida.
State and, school.
Yeah, yeah. And so, like, it was kind of paid for and cheap. And, you know, I just kind of finished my degree and was like, okay, I just want to finish and be done with it and move on to something else. Now, in hindsight, I would have gone to school for ag, but I didn't know coming out of high school that this was what, for horticulture, but I didn't know coming out of high school that this was what I wanted to do for a living, for
me
sure.
Me neither.
I had
what did you want to do then?
My major was in international studies.
Okay.
So, like, I thought I was.
What's that? What is it?
It's like geography, histories of different countries and things of that sort.
So basically, I would have been
working for the government in some capacity, either in the military or in the U.S. State Department or something like that. And I decided while I was in college, I didn't really want to work for the government. And I really liked this hobby that I developed a while ago, but like became super interested by, you know, by the time I was in college.
Okay. So yeah. So you're in Tampa, you'd graduate.
Yeah.
You were in Miami. By the way, you've been to Fairchild Gardens?
Of course.
Heck
sure,
yeah. Do you like the Fairchild mango?
I do like it. It's not one of my favorites anymore because it's been surpassed by so much stuff.
Yes.
But I do have we have a Fairchild tree, and I used to have quite a few of them out in my old farm because it was one of the varieties that did well in the humidity of Loxahatchee.
Cool.
And not all mangoes do.
But it does pretty well, I think.
It does, yeah. It's a very carefree tree, I think. It's a good one still for backyarders, you know, even to this day. It's not really a commercial mango because of the size of the fruit, but it does pretty well. I after I graduated, I continued to study And I was still working at the time. I worked at Publix. I had that job for 8 years from the time I was 14 till the time I, you know, went to college. to support myself, you know.
You grew up in Florida?
I did.
Amazing.
And
yeah.
I was born in Miami. However, this is my hometown.
Really?
I grew up in Jupiter.
We moved here
and my mother still lives here a couple hundred yards away.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so just a matter of circumstance that this is my hometown.
Full circle, right?
Uh-huh, yes.
This is mine, kind of like south of here a little.
Okay.
But like, I would have never thought I'd be here.
Yeah.
Or farming.
Right, I didn't either. Not when I was growing up here. I never, if somebody had told me
what
that.
Yeah, bro.
You know, but like that's,
how old are you now?
I'm 35. I had to think about that for a second. So, yeah.
But so we're going to get into mangoes. But yeah. That's cool. So you grew up here in Jupiter.
I did. So I was born in Miami and we lived in an area that used to be called Perrine. Now it's called Palmetto Bay for the first 2 years of my life. And then we moved here. My parents didn't want to live in Miami anymore.
Got it.
And so I grew up on the Loxhatchee River. After my parents divorced, my mom moved over here to this side, on the other side of the water there. And I lived there until I went to college. So I spent basically my entire childhood in Jupiter.
Amazing.
With the exception of a couple of years in Miami.
Did you grow up eating mangoes around here?
You know, what's interesting is one of my earliest memories, I have memories that date back to when I was like a toddler in Miami. So like one of my first memories was probably 2-year-old in Miami. I was learning English and Spanish at the time. I later stopped learning Spanish, unfortunately, but I remember that one of the words that was the same in both languages was mango, and we had a mango tree in our yard in Miami, and it had orange-red fruit hanging from the tree, and I can still remember looking through the window and pointing and saying, mangoes. I can remember that. My mother told me later on that she used to feed me mangoes as a baby. But anyway, they were around me when I grew up here. Now, we moved to Jupiter. I think my dad planted a mango tree in one of the houses there.
And then,
so I was around them, right? But I didn't start to get seriously into mangoes until later. Now, my grandparents moved from New Jersey when I was a kid, and they would babysit me and my sister sometimes. And they would go on walks around the neighborhoods, and they would pick up mangoes on the sidewalks and stuff, take them home, and they'd cut them up and they'd put them in their fridge. And so after dinner, if I was at my grandparents' house, they'd put these bowls of chilled mangoes on the table and we'd eat them.
Yeah.
And I really liked them. I was like, wow, these are so good. I looked forward to it, right?
Yes.
I would look forward to going to my grandparents' house because I knew I'd get to eat a bowl of mangoes, at least in the summer months, right?
Chilled.
Yeah. So then that's the next stage of exposure for me. And then in high school, I would ride the school bus and we'd go through the neighborhoods along Riverside Drive between Center Street and Indian Town Road. And I started to notice not just that there were mangoes, because in the spring, you know, the mangoes are maturing during the spring semester, right? Towards the summer. I started noticing there was different kinds. They had different shapes and sizes.
Yeah.
And that was interesting to me as a 14-year-old kid or something like that.
Noticed that on the bus.
I noticed it on the bus.
I like going through River Road.
Riverside Drive.
Yeah.
You can see these different mango trees in people's yards. And, you know, me just sitting there by myself looking through the window, I just looked at all these trees and I'm like, wow, I'm noticing that there's differences. And so that's
noticing
where
the variety.
Yeah. And in hindsight, I know what some of them were. And I, you know, like I know.
Looking back.
Yeah. And I knew some of them. I remember like on Riverside Drive, there was a Cushman mango and it had this beautiful yellow, really looked like a grapefruit. And
they're good. Cushman's good.
They're very good. But like, I didn't know this when
Cushman
I was in high
with
school.
The C.
Yeah. And so.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I knew some of them now in hindsight were Kits and Haydens. And
a lot of those.
One of the people I later became friends with, this bus would go by his house and it was a carry that was in his yard. But like, I remember seeing that, you know, riding the school bus. So I became more interested. And then by the time
I
went to college and I was interested in them quite a bit, but like I had a different career track in mind and my father became ill and couldn't take care of his yard anymore. And by that point he had moved up to Ormond Beach,
North Florida.
Yeah, like north of Daytona. And so he couldn't take care of his yard And I started going on weekends from Tampa up to Ormond Beach. And I'd stay, like, I even made my classes so that it was only, like, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, so I could stay, like, Thursday night all the way to, like, Monday evening. And I'd garden, take care of the yard. I planted trees and stuff. And that was in college, and that's where I became, like, so seriously interested in them that I was, like, doing all that research. So, mm-hmm. And I told you, like, I didn't see a lot of consolidated information about mangoes, so I actually started writing Wikipedia articles about mangoes. So now if you go on to Google or whatever and you look up Hayden mango or Edward mango, one of the first results usually is a wiki that I wrote in college.
No way.
Because I had no life and had no better things to do than to write Wikipedia articles about mangoes.
You were the one we're reading about Hayden mangoes. It's
yeah.
your...
Yeah, yeah. Like if you look at the wikis, you look at the histories on them, I wrote those articles. You know, they've been edited since and everything. But like, and I wrote tons of them. I don't know how many I made, but like it was a lot.
So you were geeking out over all the mangoes.
Yeah, yeah.
You're planting it at your dad's house in Ormond Beach,
which was a terrible place to put them, but I
yeah,
had some.
I was gonna
there,
say
yeah.
is it did it work?
We no well kind of
it's really
I, what
cold.
Happened was I knew it was cold up there, and so some of them I put in the ground and built little tents around during the freezes, and then a couple of them I kept in pots and just took them inside the garage during the freezes. And so this was in 2009 2010. And so like
you took them in the house.
I did some of them. And then some of them I built a tent around and they survived, but they got damaged. They got left behind later on after my father passed away. But like some of the potted ones I took and planted or gave two of them to my grandparents. And one of those trees is still alive and it's a big carry tree now, but it was in a pot and it originally fruited in Ormond Beach. Anyway, so that was how I got into it. And I became so fascinated with them that I thought I would make a career out of it. And somehow I have. So. But that was how I got
That's
introduced
incredible.
To the Sturrock. And I became friends with Jack Sturrock.
And so
by that point, I had already, in 2011, I bought 5 acres of land out in Loxahatchee. This was when the real estate market was cratered after the 2008 financial collapse.
Yeah.
You know, real estate prices in Florida were terrible, low. You know, back then. And I knew it. Like, I knew, okay, this is an opportunity, a chance for me to do something.
Amazing.
So, you know.
Like, get
yeah,
some land.
Get some land while it's still affordable, you know. And if I had waited, it would not have been affordable.
Yeah, there
so
you go.
I got 5 acres of land and I started a business cold turkey. And then I, you know, Jack and I became such good friends that, like, you know, we kind of collaborated on and notes and trees and we bought trees and he was collecting them up in Jacksonville. And
Jack's the son.
Yeah.
Oh, Gene
cool. Sturrock's one of her sons.
Amazing.
And they had like, I don't know how many children, several daughters and two sons. And he was retired now, but a veterinarian up in Jacksonville. But he was like getting to the point where he liked mangoes more than he liked dogs and cats. So
he was out in the field all day.
Yeah, when he could be. So he.
So he planted all those, and along with
the old trees were planted by his father and grandfather.
Yeah.
A long time ago, but the newer trees.
The big trees.
Yeah, the big trees, but the younger trees that are on the farm, him and I planted together beginning in 2014. Because what happened was his mother passed away in 2012, and that. In 2012, I had, you know, had that property in Loxahatchee for a year, and I had started my business already, but
in Loxahatchee,
and so I had a lot of trees planted and growing out there. But initially, before I started my business, the idea in mind was that my business plan was that I was going to sell trees and I was going to sell fruit, both. But I kind of thought trees might be the more important factor, at least initially. So
cool. And what happened, by the way?
It was interesting. I planted a lot of trees and I started keeping a lot of trees in my nursery there that I had started. Yeah. And it turned out people weren't so interested in buying trees in 2011.
They didn't want the trees.
No, they would talk about them, but they wouldn't actually buy them. But they sure as hell were interested in fruit. They were very interested
That's
in buying
right.
fruit. And I
fruits,
realized that and recognized that early. But the problem was that I didn't have a lot of fruit ready from these young little trees that I'd planted. I had planted a few big ones.
You learn quick.
So I was like, okay, well, I need to make some revenue. I need to make some money because I'm not making any money. Yeah. And I did sell some trees back then, and I shipped some trees even. Like I sold them on eBay and stuff, but like I wasn't making a lot of money. And so
cool.
Jack's mother was still living there at that house in West Palm, and they had all these mango trees with huge canopies, and the fruit was basically going to waste. There was somebody that would throw them some cash and harvest them green, but it wasn't much. So I was like, okay, well, if all this fruit's going to waste, why don't I just offer to pay you a cut, and I'll sell the fruit and, you know, pay you a cut of that money, Gene Sturrock, and we'll both benefit from it. And they said, yeah, sure.
Amazing.
So that first year in 2012, I harvested that place for the first time, and I sold the fruit at green markets and only at green markets because I knew that nobody knew what that place was. So I went to three different green markets and rotated between them. And I made a deal with somebody over on Pennock Point, and I started harvesting an orchard there. There was a smaller orchard on Pennock Point.
On Pennock Point, dude, that's
here in Jupiter.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, there are clients.
That was owned by a man named Norman Suddeth at the time, and it's now owned by Ricky Fowler, but the golfer.
Right.
But back then, Norman Suddeth had owned it for several decades, and I had introduced myself to him. I don't know how many years before that, but I had an agreement with him. I paid him for the rights to harvest the place, so I was harvesting that place.
There's like the 40 huge trees on Pennock Point, huge. How many did you harvest from there?
Oh, it was in the thousands of pounds. I don't know how many.
You would just like pick them up, thousands of pounds.
No, not at once. But like, I would harvest the place. I don't know if I was there every day, but pretty much almost every day, at least every other day. And
you were getting them perfect.
Yeah. And then I actually had a guy that had some experience picking mangoes that I paid to help me too. I guess he was technically my first employee. But anyway.
I'm just fascinated, dude. So there was a profit sharing going to get the fruit.
Exactly, yeah. So I was paying them for the rights, and then I was selling the fruit at green markets. So I went through three different green markets. One was in Gardens, the Palm Beach Gardens green market, and then Palm Beach market when they did it in the summer back then. And then the other one was a small market in Boca. So I had a little white Buick Century that I'd had since high school, and I would pack it full of fruit. It looked ridiculous. And I would put tables in it. It looked like I was living out of that car practically. And
it looked
I would
like a science project.
I would take all this stuff to a green markets and set up and sold the fruit that way that first year. And then the next year, I finally opened up at the farm in West Palm and started selling on site and reduced the amount of green markets.
And you started to taper off the green market.
Correct. Yeah. So
I did the same. I started at the green market too, by the way, the Gardens.
It's a great way to get exposure and people to learn about your product and your business.
But people will still call like, yo, I met you at the green market.
Yeah. So
like, I'm like, whoa.
I don't get those customers anymore because it was such a long time ago. I mean, there might be a few, there might be a couple, but that was how I started.
That's
and then
amazing.
In 2013 was when I first started selling on the farm in West Palm. And it was funny. I used to literally fall asleep, doze off, waiting for people to come.
No way.
Yeah.
Because
that first year.
Just working hours, so many hours.
Well, not just that. A lot of work involved for sure. But it's just because nobody was coming. Sounds absurd because now we'll open that gate and there's a line of cars backed up to Parker Avenue or something. But like back then, I'd wait around for people to come to this fruit stand that I made on the farm and nobody knew we were there. So it took years to build up enough clientele.
Alex, that's amazing, by the way, because you've built something pretty really rad, really cool. Yeah, man. So by the way, if you guys are in West Palm, you know, you should definitely go. We should put your link below. You sell trees now too, right?
We do.
Or just fruit.
It's funny. I told you about how trees initially were kind of a loser business for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it stayed that way for several years. In fact, I pretty much threw my hands up and said, this isn't even worth my time. I would sell some trees, but like I focused on fruit.
Like
I was
fruit slinging.
This is the way I'm going to make money, it looks like.
And that's seasonal too, by the way.
Sure. And so I was like, okay, if this is how it's going to be, this is how it's going to be, and I'm just going to adapt. Mm. So for years, people wouldn't buy that many trees. And this was the case in general, I think. You know, people sold trees, but the more established nurseries were selling most of them. And then in 2015 or 16, something changed. And all of a sudden, people became interested in buying mango trees.
No way.
And so...
2015, 2016.
Correct, yes.
What was that?
I don't know.
Some sort of awakening.
I'm not sure. But something happened where all of a sudden there was a revival in interest, serious interest. Like before, it was like nonsense. People would be like, oh, I want to buy trees. And then they would never come and buy them. Well, all of a sudden, there was elevating interest for some reason around that time.
And you started to sell trees at that
time. I started to sell trees. But at that time... if I wanted to sell trees, I had to obtain them all wholesale. And you only had a couple options. And you still only have a couple options to this day.
That's right.
So, like, I had to get them from Zill High Performance Plants or Pine Island Nursery. And Zill High Performance Plants was a lot closer to me. And they had better selection anyway. So I would get trees from the Zill Nursery. And I would, who I already had a relationship with anyway, because I'd bought a lot of trees from the Zill Nursery when I was starting my farm initially. But
putting them in the ground
and, you know, trying to sell them too initially that first year.
Yeah.
So that went on for a few years where we saw this increasing interest in trees, and it was really starting to shoot up in 2019. So everyone like thinks that the tree, you know, market skyrocketing was because of COVID. It started well before COVID.
Interesting.
And we saw it coming. And then COVID just sent it on another level.
What do you
level.
Mean you saw it coming?
I saw what was going to happen because there was a bottleneck, if you will, in the market for mango trees, or rather the production of mango trees and tropical fruit trees in general in Florida. See, there's lots of nurseries, and this continues to this day. There's lots of nurseries that sell mango trees, right?
Yeah.
All over the state of Florida, everywhere, on online, whatever. The amount of nurseries that produce mango trees on scale, and I'm talking about in the thousands of trees or whatever, can be counted on one hand.
I know.
You've got Zill High Performance
Plants. You're talking about, who makes the source. Yeah.
Now, this is in 2024. Okay. Not saying there aren't other nurseries besides this list that
make them.
Okay. But not in this kind of scale. You've got Zill High Performance Plants at the top. Okay. And then you've got... Pine Island now makes their own. They didn't used to before. They used to buy all their trees from Zill, ironically.
That's right.
But now they make their own. So you got Pine Island. You've got Excalibur. You've got Lara Farms, Julian Lara, my friend that's down in Homestead, and us. And that's it. Everybody else that makes them does not make them on this scale. Now, there are people trying to get into it that I'm aware of, but not very many that can do it, capable of doing it.
Wait. Matt Reese.
How many is he making?
Organic. You know,
I know Matt Reese.
Couple
hundred. Okay, great.
By the way,
and good for Matt because he gets good prices for his trees.
Yeah.
By the way, and he makes some stuff that other nurseries don't make.
He does.
Which is great. But what I'm talking about is like a lot. Like, well, when I say a lot, a lot is not what Zill makes. Zill makes 300,000 trees a year now.
Zill's a factory.
Sure. Dude. It's just they're like the overwhelming majority of mango trees that come out of Florida.
How many do you guys make a year?
We made about 10,000 last year, which, nothing compared to Zill, but it's still like...
You grafted those?
I graft some. My employees do the bulk of it now.
Right
so
on.
Before when I started actually producing my own trees, I had to graft them myself. And I still graft myself, but like I don't have the time to churn out that many trees. And so fortunately,
dude.
I have some very good employees. They're actually part-time employees who help us out in that regard. But
shout out.
Anyway, so in 2019, I'm looking at this and I'm like,
yes,
this is nuts. There's all these nurseries in California and Arizona trying to buy mango trees in Florida. And there's all these people that were, even at that time, moving to Florida wanting to plant mango trees.
By the truckload. Sending them to Texas, remember?
Yes, I remember.
They were like, we don't have any trees. I'm like, what do you mean?
Yeah,
you
because
trees?
Somebody just took a bunch of them to Phoenix.
Yeah.
Like, and it was absurd. They were just, I'm watching these trucks leave the Zill Nursery. I'm like, this isn't sustainable.
Yeah.
What's going to happen is there's going to be a shortage of these things, and it's going to happen really soon.
Brother,
well, guess what?
Because I don't think I knew you at that time.
I was thinking
the same thing. I was like, yo, we need mangoes.
So one year later, COVID happens, and boom, the market explodes, and Zill sells out of mango trees.
That's right.
And all the nurseries in Florida start selling out of mango trees.
But by the way, everybody wanted fruit trees too.
Sure.
After COVID, my phone was going off like five times the amount.
So
overnight.
So it was
for fruit trees.
It was amazing. We saw it too, and we saw it coming. And
we were like, "What the hell?"
Well,
is
everybody,
going on?
Yeah. So everyone else got caught like flat-footed, and I knew a year in advance by just studying what was going on that this was going to happen at some point. So we planned it, and we said we're going to start producing our own trees because it just makes sense to do it because we have all these varieties that we collected, and at that point, you know, we had approaching 300 varieties. Now we're over that figure. And we're like, we have all these unique things. Why don't we make them for people instead of just selling what everyone else is already selling? So we did that. And we started to graft our own in 2020.
You made that decision consciously.
Yes.
Let's go.
And ever since then, we've been increasing our production and we've, you know, sold an enormous amount of trees. And it's become the focus of our business. It's more important than
the
fruit
Put it there. Let's go.
I never, but like I told you in the beginning, it wasn't yeah, like that at all.
And by the way, I've adjusted a lot, adapted, you called it.
Yeah.
In my business, because I'm glad to have you on because you're a real entrepreneur, like business person, like farmer, whatever you want to call it. Adaptability is really important.
Sure.
What's the season bringing? Like even the first question I asked, like, how are the mangoes looking? Like that's important as a mango farmer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But anyways, it's really cool, man. So now people want the trees, you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that market actually continues to grow while the fruit market is probably headed for some rough territory. So there's a lot of people.
Why?
Well, because a lot of people have planted mango trees. And when I say rough territory, I could be exaggerating a bit. But in the last 4 years or so, the number of, you know, new plantings of mangoes in terms of acreage has expanded on a scale that it probably hasn't expanded on in like 70 years or something like that.
New mango plantings.
Yeah, whether it's, I mean, we can count everything from people just planting them in their yards to like actually people planting 5, 10, 20 or more acres of mangoes. And in an industry that's not very big, that's a significant, you know, addition. And so there's a lot of people planting them and there's going to be a lot more mango fruit available, which is wonderful for consumers. Like the amount of opportunity for, you know, enjoying mangoes is going to be on a scale never before seen in the history of mangoes in Florida for people that want to eat them and share them and send them and whatever. But for
That's
growers,
good.
It
good.
Means a lot of competition
Got
and
it.
Amongst one another.
For
so
people like you.
Sure. And I've seen that coming for several years now. And so like the interesting thing though is because of the bottleneck in tree production and because of all these people trying to plant mango trees in places that you never would have associated with mangoes, whether it's in parts of Florida or California or Texas or whatever, or Arizona, and because we ship mango trees too, that aspect of our business has opportunity to grow. You know, more so compared to the fruit, which there's opportunity for the fruit to grow because the untapped market for mangoes is still huge in the United States.
It's
but you have
true.
To reach those people. And that takes effort and that takes coordination and stuff. And we're not at that point yet as an industry.
Well, like Facebook ads.
More than that.
Like
I mean, like,
and
it's making the person in New York or Chicago even aware that there is such a thing as a Florida mango.
Yeah.
Because most of them have
by
no
the way,
idea.
Yeah, by the way, they don't. Yeah. Which leads us to the next topic, which we put off this whole time. By the way, that's an epic story, dude.
Thanks.
Because it's cool to see your farm and just all the mangoes. It's just epic, guys. You got to check it out. We got to get into mangoes, brother.
Sure. Let's get into mangoes.
So what are the ones you graft? What are your favorites? Let's get into it.
So I like to break the favorites down into like the old school favorites that they've stood the test of time. And then the newer varieties, the newer hybrids that haven't been around as long, but are still, that are exceptional. So I don't like to become too focused on these newer hybrids because there's still old ones that are well worth people's attention and time. So like amongst the old school stuff, one of my favorites is Dot. I still love Carrie.
Carrie's great.
There's great ones like Gary, the Gary mango, which Gary Zill named back in the 60s or 70s, I guess.
Those are little too.
Yeah, they're small. And those are some old school varieties that have been around a long time and yet they're still awesome. They're still amongst the best, right?
The dot.
I just did a video with Paul Neeson about the dot, or it was one of the ones we covered. And I love the dot mango. We have four of them at the farm in West Palm. So those are some great old school ones. And we have a lot of Edward trees, which is still a wonderful mango too. You know, that's been around for almost 100 years now.
In West Palm?
No, not in West Palm, but the Edward Simmons planted the seeds in the 20s. So here we are, it's 2024. He probably planted those in the, you know, mid or late 20s. So that it's a variety. As a variety, it's 100 years old. Amongst the new stuff, I love, my favorite mango is Sweet Tart. That's one of Gary Zill's hybrids. I love Orange Sherbet. I love Pina Colada.
Orange Sherbet.
Yeah, yeah. Orange Sherbet's amazing.
And Pina Colada.
Yeah, yeah. There's so many. Phoenix.
Those are kind of, Phoenix.
Yeah.
Is that a new one?
Yeah. It's such a long list, and we could, you know, I could spend hours talking about them, but I have a lot of favorites now, right? You know, and
I love how you have categories of your favorites. I'm like, what's your favorite? You're like, I break it down into two categories.
Yeah, because like I want to still shine some light on the old stuff. There's people that become really obsessed with these new varieties, these candy flavors, and they like won't give a second thought to a mango that's more than like the variety's like more than 30 years old or something, you know?
Totally.
And there's ones that have come in between then that are great too, like CAC and Angie that got introduced, you know, decades ago. And
what's the problem with that? Why would you say, like, why are you discounting these old mangoes? Like, is that what you'd say to them? Like, what, you know, what's so great about the dot?
They're
delicious.
Yeah, they're delicious, right? But like, I mean, why does it get discounted? Well, I mean, like things get passed over that have a lot of merit all the time. And, you know, sometimes they're worth keeping around, but the hype amongst something that's newer and more exciting sounding or whatever, you know, these new varieties get cool names too. That's the other thing. Just makes it easy to kind of lose the forest for the trees, as they say.
And maybe, do you think it's also, maybe they're not seeing like it's tried and true, like it's grown many, many seasons. Like, isn't that important too?
That matters. And but then there's other factors to consider for people that are trying to plant mangoes too, and that go beyond flavor and eating quality. So when people come to our nursery and ask us what mango I recommend, the first thing I ask them is, where are you located? Because something that I love, like Dot or Gary, is not a good choice for Loxahatchee or Royal Palm Beach even, or something like that. So,
dude, let's talk about that. You're talking about, so you're east of 95, meaning
correct,
close to the ocean.
Very, yeah.
And a lot of mangoes do well across the board. Indian, Southeast Asia.
It's the best place in the United States to grow them.
Wow. Right there.
Yes,
where
right
you
there.
Are.
So.
Across, wow.
And that's kind of remarkable because they start behaving differently when you go to the west side of I-95.
That's right. Inland.
But that's not very far away from where we're located. And then you go out west of 441 or the Turnpike, and they start behaving radically differently. And, you know, varieties can't fruit out there.
So let's talk about that, because people would get all excited. Oh, I'm going to be like, Alex, I'm going to go start a mango farm, put in 1,000 trees. People go and do this stuff.
They do, yes. They do.
And it's in the wrong spot.
So, yes.
What would you say to that person?
I do consulting work, and I've encountered exactly what you're describing on a number of occasions. In fact, I just did a consult over in the Naples area. I guess Estero is where they're located, and they had thousands of trees, but they planted a little too much of a couple varieties, but really one variety. And what do you say to somebody like that? Because they've already made a mistake, and it's not an easy mistake to correct, right? Well, most of the time, if they have available space to plant on and they're still planning on planting more trees, I say, this is what you should plant and this is what you shouldn't plant. Beyond that, it's, you know, their horticultural care practices sometimes can be changed, but the most effective thing you can do is change varieties. And fortunately with mangoes, you can. You cut them back, you graft them over into something else. And for some people, that's a painful experience, but sometimes necessary. I've certainly done it myself plenty of times.
Yeah.
And that's usually what I tell them. Consider growing something else, another kind of mango that can resist.
Like start now.
Yeah, start yesterday.
Yeah.
The sooner you can start, the better off you'll be. You know, it takes some years before you're getting, you know, into the full swing of production. So
it takes time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that happens. So, I mean, a lot of people run out there and they get so excited about these things that they just plant things without taking into consideration how they're actually going to perform. So
which ones do well out west? Just to finish that thought, and then we're back to...
Yeah, the ones that do well out west, that so just a few of the good ones. We already talked about Fairchild, but there's also Pickering. Duncan does very well out west. Glen, Valencia Pride, those are old mangoes. Valencia Pride and Glen have been around here for a long time, but they actually perform well even today out in Loxahatchee land.
Yeah.
So
they spit
there's something
fruit.
To be said about that, right?
Yeah,
even if it's not the best mango.
Every year.
Other varieties that did well out there were like Floragon. Sweet Tart does pretty well out there amongst the newer stuff. Lemon Meringue does okay. It's a longer list than that, but like it's a much shorter list than what can do well when you go a little further east.
Yeah, exactly. When you so Pickering's great.
Great tree, no matter where you are. I call it an insurance mango because it ensures that you're going to get fruit more years than not, no matter what happens. If you don't spray your trees, if you're in a bad location, whatever. Those trees are machines, so I love them.
I love talking about mangoes with you, dude. It's amazing. How many mangoes do you have at your place?
Trees or varieties?
Both. Great question.
All right. Trees or varieties, it's going to be over 320 now. Total trees, I haven't counted in a long time, and I need to, but it's probably around 1,000. I'm guessing, including the temporary trees that we've planted and stuff, but it might be a little less than that now. I'm not sure. We are still planting some mango trees. We're not totally done.
Hey, so. I love it. There's more to be planted.
A little bit. Not a lot of space left, but there is some sections where we've reserved some space for a few more to be planted.
Amazing.
So, yes.
320 varieties.
Something like that. Yeah. And we're still adding varieties. And I can still add a variety relatively easily because I have multiples of certain trees that I don't need to keep. And I can cut one back to a stump and just graft it over into something else.
Mm.
So
yeah, people get scared to do things like that. You've probably encountered that.
I have, but
it's the move sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, like if you want to be successful or happy, sometimes you have to be able to make some painful choices. And you know, that happens in agriculture and gardening too.
Yeah, that's it. So Alex, it's been great having you, man. I wish we could be here for many, many more hours and just talk varieties alone. But yeah, what are you looking at for this year? Like, what varieties are you most excited about? The guava at that event, by the way, was my favorite.
Awesome. I'll have some guava. I don't know how much because one of them isn't fruiting this year, but that's a very good mango. What am I most excited about this year?
Your favorite.
I have a really nice crop on our Phoenix trees. That's a terrific mango that I'm excited we'll have. Our dot trees, like I mentioned, Phoenix. One of my favorite mangoes. I can't wait to have a nice crop on our dots. And there's certainly others. Some of our orange sherbets are doing well. So all the really exciting varieties that happen to have a nice crop on them, that's what I'm excited for because that's a chance to really blow people away when they try sometimes a good mango for the first time in their lives. You know, we always get those people every year, including, you know, people that just moved here or whatever. And we get the people that are very well accustomed to mangoes already. But
dude, so talk about that. People don't know how good these mangoes are.
They don't.
What? Like, Alex, your product is just like, it's insane.
Well, it's really remarkable because so many people still have not had a good one. And if they've had a mango, and a lot of people in the United States haven't, and in the West in general.
Why is that? What are you
talking about? I mean, like, one thing, the geographic area they can be grown in is so small relative to the rest of the country, right? It's pretty much restricted to Florida. And parts of Southern California, and then some crazy people in Arizona and Texas that are trying to do it too. But otherwise, they're off limits to the rest of the country. You can't grow them in Tennessee or Ohio or whatever. So, you know, there's not like an abundant local supply of these things for everybody outside of Florida and or Hawaii. So, like, that's one thing. It's exposure, right? You go to the store and there's like 12 different kinds of apples or whatever and a bunch of different kinds of peaches and plums and what have you.
Right.
And there's one kind of mango, two if you're lucky, right?
So and what is that mango?
Usually it's Tommy Atkins or a Kent, and then the yellow ones will be the Ataulfos if they have them. So it's not a long list of commercial varieties that are available.
Too much fiber.
All kinds of issues. They get picked too early, way too early.
Imported from...
Yeah, that's a discussion all in of itself.
Yeah, we don't even need to discuss that.
Yeah, but I mean, like, the bottom line is if that's their exposure to a mango, it's not a positive one a lot of the time. So a lot of Americans think that mangoes just aren't very good and not even worth their time. and having never tried like a locally grown one in Florida. So even
when
for
it's
those
like
folks,
the pinnacle, when it's like the pinnacle, mangoes.
Yeah, they're
I
like
think.
They're like, wow. If the, if somebody we get somebody that's never had a good one before, it can be a life changing experience for them, right? So. But
it's like Willy Wonka, I think about
it.
It
is, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I've thought about that too, actually. So like there's so many people in the United States. There's, fortunately, we have lots of ethnicities that are so familiar with mangoes because they grew up with them in the tropics, right?
Yes.
Tons of people from India, Pakistan, the Caribbean islands, East Asia. They know mangoes. They grew up with them. They're in the fabric of their lives, right? But not for Americans. So Americans require exposure. They require education. And Westerners in general, that's true. And
it's true.
If we
that's
want,
what you're doing. That's yeah, what we're doing.
So if we want mangoes to really take off, we have to teach people about them. And you want to see Florida mangoes available in like the grocery store in New Jersey or something like that if you really want to see their popularity explode. So
I love the vision of the future.
Yeah. But that requires a lot of cooperation and coordination and effort. And I'd like to get more people involved in accomplishing that somehow. But
what would get us there?
Well, like examples, because it's not one thing, right? Imagine if you had an you know, expose about mangoes on Good Morning America, or, you know, if you had a big event in Times Square, New York, where you're handing out mangoes, or over at the Chicago Board of Trade or something like that to the general public. Here, have a lemon zest mango, or have a whatever, a dot mango, and
on Good Morning America,
just a Florida mango, whatever. You could give them Glens and things like that, and they're going to be like surprised that something could taste that good, much less the, you know, the big hitters of the mango trade, right? So like, I'm just using something like that as an example of things and events and that can get more, and it helps when even when big corporations like McDonald's or something have like a mango smoothie. And there's been efforts in that regard by like the National Mango Board and some of the importers to like make mango a popular flavor, because that gets people exposed to them too. But I'm talking about for Florida, not just like imported mangoes. I'm talking about promoting Florida mangoes and mango culture in Florida. So
yeah, man, let's bring it back. It's like the citrus was the old kind of right culture, like you said.
Yes, the thing that we associated mangoes. The fruit we associated with Florida, and I would love for mangoes to become that, because citrus has lost that place. Citrus is going extinct in Florida, essentially,
like
which is a
dinosaur,
sad, very sad. Because I grew up with them here in Jupiter. I used to, me and my friends would like throw them at each other as kids and squeeze them on each other's heads. It's
I
like,
remember.
Yeah,
that was the fruit.
Yeah,
it was.
Every yard had a citrus tree.
In Tequesta
or whatever, they were
citrus.
All. Yeah, everyone had them, whether they were mandarins or grapefruits or oranges or whatever. And mangoes should become that fruit in Florida, but it That's might require an effort on those of us that are vested in it as an industry. So I'm hoping that we can start a new mango organization like they used to have 70 years ago. To promote the mango in Florida. And that's one of my goals this year, is to actually get the groundwork started on doing that.
Let's go. What is that? The mango organization?
Back then, it was called the Florida Mango Forum, which was a great organization that used to hold conventions in different parts of the state wherever they grew mangoes. And they'd have this basically a convention every year, a festival kind of, but
Amazing.
They would hold it indoors, which was, I thought, a very interesting idea, because like the Fairchild Festival is held outside in July in Coral Gables, which is brutal. And it's not great for getting people to come back, right? But like, I thought, what if we held something similar? And we did it in like the Palm Beach Convention Center or the Miami-Dade Convention Center or the fairgrounds or whatever, inside
indoors.
In air conditioning. And where we had all these members of our industry out there talking to people, giving, you know, helpful tips and doing a real serious mango tasting where like you can try all these dozens and dozens of varieties, you know, that at the Fairchild event, which has kind of been the only thing comparable to that for the last several decades, they would sample out like five mangoes, and some of them were Kents and Ataulfos and Tommies and things like that got imported, you know, like that's not mango in Florida. That's not our mango culture.
I've been to some good ones.
I have too, but like.
And you hosted a good one. Went to.
So my dream is like, imagine if you had me and Chris Wenzel and Julian Lara and some of these other folks that are kind of recognized in our industry collaborating together and like, here, you can come to this event and sample and try all these varieties and see them and learn about them. And you can, you know, buy trees or whatever.
And there's speakers. Sure. I love that.
So I think that's a great way to encourage mango culture in Florida. And then such an organization could also make an effort to promote the mango, the Florida mango, in other states, so that people in New Jersey or Ohio or Michigan or whatever can at least know that there are high quality mangoes being grown here in the United States and that are available to them, you know, on a click of a button.
I love it. Dude, this is amazing. Yeah. Mangoes. Let's spread the good word. I love it, man. Is there anything else you want to talk about today? That's amazing. The Mango Forum, I want you to come back and tell us about that.
I would love to. And we can share that. And I would love to talk about that because I want to get people involved in it. But like, as far as
we could go for so long on mangoes.
Yeah, it's
incredible.
Crazy. You could do multiple podcasts on them, and I don't want to waste people's time or whatever. Yeah. But like, it's
great, brother.
As far as I don't know. I mean, like, we're approaching mango season. It's going to happen between the months of May and August this year in South Florida. So there's not going to be a lot of early fruit, but by some point in May, we'll have mangoes. Some of the other farms will. It's going to peak in later June this year, I'm pretty sure, will be the peak of the season. So for those of you watching and you want to try mangoes and you're not, you know, accustomed to them yet or whatever, there's going to be an opportunity this year in the summer. And my company is, of course, Tropical Acres Farms. We have a website with descriptions of a lot of the mangoes we grow. And it's a good chance to learn about some of them if you want to read about mangoes or you're just curious or whatever.
Yeah, you're having an event, too? They can come taste it? Or?
We're going to do it. We're hoping. We're going to try to do it in a public place this year instead of at the farm, if possible, so that we can just handle more people. And I'm trying to get
June?
Other growers involved.
In
so
June?
I've talked to Chris Wenzel at Truly Tropical. I've talked to Julian Lara.
Cool.
And I'm going to talk to some other people and we'll see if we can collaborate and do something really special. We'll see.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you for coming on, man.
Of course. Thanks for inviting me.
Cool. See you guys. Yeah.